Cherryborn House, the place of my nativity, is situated on the south bank of the Tyne in the county of Northumberland, and about a quarter of a mile from the river. The house, stables and so on, are situated on the west side of the Little Dean and Bourne, whose bank was embellished with a number of plum trees and terminated with the garden on the north of them. Near the house were two large ash trees from one root, but the top of one of them was blown away in a high wind. At the south end of the premises was the spring well, overhung by a large hawthorn bush, behind which was a holly hedge, and beyond this again was a little boggy dean with underwood and trees of different kinds. Near the termination of this dean, towards the river, was a good many remarkably tall and small ash trees, and one of oak, supposed to be one of the tallest and straightest in the kingdom. On the tops of these was a rookery, the sable inhabitants of which, by their consultations and cairns and bustles they made when building their nests, were among the first of the feathered race to proclaim the approaching spring. To the eastward were cornfields and pastures, mostly surrounded with very large oaks and some ash trees. Indeed, at that time, the country between Wylam and Bywell was beautified with a great deal of wood, which presented the appearance of a continued forest. But these are long since stubbed up. Needy gentry care little about the beauty of country, and part of it is now comparatively as bare as a mole hill. To the westward, adjoining the house, lay the common or fell, which extended some miles in length and of various breadths. It was mostly fine greensward or pasturage, broken and divided indeed with clumps of blossomed whins, foxglove, fawn, and some junipers, and to the westward with heather in profusion sufficient to scent the whole air. By the side of the bourns which gut at its sides, or scooped out hollow gills, were seen the remains of old oaks, hollowed out by time, with alders, willows, and birch, which were often to be met with in the same state, and these seemed to me to point out the length of time that these domains had belonged to nobody. On this common, the poor man's heritage for ages past, he kept a few sheep, or a kyle or cow, and perhaps a flock of geese, and mostly a stock of beehives. Here and there on this common were to be seen the cottage, or rather hovel, of some labouring man, built mostly at his own expense, with his own hands, and to this he always added a garth and a garden, upon which great pains and labour were bestowed, to make both productive, and for this purpose not a bit of manure was suffered to be wasted away on the lawns or public roads. These cottagers, at least those of them on you, were of an honest and independent character, while at the same time they held the neighbouring gentry in the greatest estimation and respect, and these again, in return, did not overlook them, but were interested in knowing that they were happy and well. Will Buick, from being much struck with my performances, which he called pictures, became exceedingly kind to me, and was the first person from whom I gathered a kind of general knowledge of astronomy and of the magnitude of the universe. He had, the year through, noticed the appearances of the stars and the planets, and would discourse largely on the subject. I think I see him yet, sitting on a mound or seat by the hedge of his garden, regardless of the cold, and intent upon viewing the heavenly bodies, pointing to them with his large hands, and eagerly imparting his knowledge to me, with a strong voice, such a one as one no seldom hears. I remember well with being much struck with his appearance, his stern-looking brows, high cheekbones, quick eye and languish visage, and at his resolution upon another occasion, when he determined upon risking his own life to save that of another man. This man, in the employ of my father, while at work as a pitman, had lost his way in the coal walkings for perhaps a day or two. One old neighbour, just described, who was also a pitman and knew the walkings, equipped himself with everything he thought necessary for so hazardous an undertaking, and when he was about to gan doon the pit shaft, I felt much distressed at seeing me mother trembling, in great agitation of mind, for the safety of both him and his lost associate. After travelling and traversing through the old walkings of the colliery, so long that it was feared he had also lost himself, his well-known voice came thundering from the bottom of the pit shaft, and he called, "All's well," to the inexpressible joy of all who now crowded the pit heap or surrounded its mouth. Before taking leave of these hardy inhabitants of the fells and wastes, whose hovels were surrounded with whins and heather, I must observe that they always appeared to me, notwithstanding their apparent poverty, to enjoy health and happiness in a degree surpassing that of most other men. Their daily fare was commonly coarse bread, potatoes, oatmeal, porridge and milk, and was only varied by their boiling the pot with animal food cabbage or other succulent vegetables and broth on Sundays. When tired at night with labour, having few cares to perplex them, they lay down and slept soundly, and arose refreshed from their hard beds with vigour early in the morning.